Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Fred Loima of Loima Winery. My name is Antoinette Landejean from Cork and Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'd like to introduce today's presenter, Fred Loima. Fred started working with his father, Alfred, in 1988 after completing his studies at Cloister Neuburg with winemaking stints in Germany's Nahe and in California. Fred took full control of his family's estate in 1997 and purchased the cellar of the Heindorf Castle on the outskirts of Langeloire. He then constructed a hyper-modern black cube on top of the old cellar, symbolizing his aesthetic for modern elegance. Fred began practicing biodynamics in 2006 and is a founding member of RESPECT, a certifying body for biodynamic viticulture in Austria. His wines are among the very best examples of Grüneveltliner and Riesling in the Kamptal. In 2002, Fred was named Winemaker of the Year by Austria's Falstaff Wine Magazine. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we'll get to them time allowing. Since our guest is joining us live from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. Fred, please introduce yourself and your beautiful winery.
Thank you, Antoinette. Thank you for introducing me at all. And yes, very well, warm welcome here from Austria. We are at the beginning of the season, so waiting for bud break. It's a regular season this year because it was a very cold April. So looking forward that we don't see problems this year on late frost, which is one of the issues here in the Kamp Valley. But Antoinette, can you start the little video first? So to get a little impression about the region, there's a film from Loisaberg, which is one of the coldest sites we have. So thank you for that. And yeah, this is me, but 50 years ago. And as you see, I took the easiest way into this business. I am born into it and never thought about doing something else. So as Antoinette mentioned already, I finished school in 83 and I was lucky enough that I'm a member of the generation in Austria which had a chance, which is unusual more or less, because we could start everything new, so we did, and find our ways in the meantime. And maybe some of you had seen the presentation of Gernot Heinrich, and Gernot is a school friend of mine. So this is the generation started in 85, 90, working together with the families in wine. You've seen already the map, but this makes it a little bit clearer where I am. The little brown spot on the left top side of the map, this is Austria. And just to get an idea of the size, the whole thing from left to right, from west to east, is only 600 kilometers, so 450 miles or something like that. So you can reach everything in Austria within a day of driving. And the wine growing is more or less everything in the east. Today you find also some vineyards in the other parts, but the main part of wine growing is in the east. Everything around Vienna in a way. So this blue spot Vienna is only an hour from my place by car. And we are very close the Danube. That's my place. I'm sitting behind this black building. This one black building in front is the entrance of the grapes. And we are lucky here that I got a chance in 98 to buy an old cave. And this is here in the middle of the vineyards, in a very old cellar row of this yellow cellar is one of the old cellar houses. And you find 1,000 here in Langenlois from the 18th and 19th century, because there were a lot of families doing on a professional base wine. And there was also one here, but we changed the building on top. The cave is the original one, but on top we built a few new buildings in the middle of the vineyards. This is the room where I'm sitting. You see behind me maybe the soil profiles, and there's a little on the right wall, there are these soil profiles that I'm sitting. And on these profiles, you see that it's a diverse situation here, not only on the soils, also on microclimates, because we are, as you have seen on the map, on the west-north border of wine growing in Austria. And only 15 minutes or 20 minutes from here is one of the coldest spots of Austria. It's a town in a forest district, always on record when it comes to the coldest temperatures. And this is influencing us very much. That's why I said a later year this year, so we are safer when it comes to the late frost situation, as we had in the last years, always sometimes close and sometimes a little bit too much, and then we are losing a few buds and sometimes more. This is when I look out of my window here, and this is the situation I can see. These slopes are belonging to one of the most important and maybe the most known site in Austria. This is the Zübing Heiligenstein. Zübing is this little village on the Kamp River. So you see the Kamp River is a smaller river, much smaller as the Danube. But these two rivers are influencing us by the soil types, but also microclimates. The Danube is the much bigger system, of course. And the Kamp and this Kamp Valley is influencing because of cold air from the north and the west. And here almost all vineyards are on these terraces. So everything here is terraced. This is because of the soil types. On one hand, it's loess, which is a wind-pressed sand. And here on Heiligenstein, it's a sandstone conglomerate. And on other places, it's gneiss and granite, primary rock. And one thing here is also that we don't have so much rains. So it's a very dry region, and we have to take care about each single drop we get. And that's why most of the vineyards are here on terraces to get all the water we'll see in summer, which is not so much. So an average year is only 450 liters. Just to get an idea, Styria in Austria is on top with 1,100, so 2.5 times more. And Burgundy or Tuscany is on 700, so also much more as we see here in our region. That's a view to Langenlois from a site called Steinmassel. And all these sites are very old names, known from Middle Age, 1500, 1600. And these sites like Steinmassel are today classified. And this is an Erste Lage, so a Premier Cru, and we do a Riesling there. And the village on the right side is the town Langenlois. It's the main town in the Kamp Valley, and it's my village where I'm living. Yeah, and maybe before we jump into that, because that's quite, I would say, intense, biodynamic is my theme today. We do that since 15 years now. I would say pour a little bit of the Brut Rosé, so you get an idea of what we are doing. Sparkling is something which turns out to be a very interesting wine for that region. So Langenlois today is, I would say, the hotspot of high quality sparklings in Austria. There are few wineries doing that on a very, very high level of quality. And we do that since 91 sparkling, but on a very small base. And in 13, we decide to go into that a little bit more in a professional way. And now sparkling is doing up to 15% of our whole production. And we are working mainly with red wine grapes here for the sparkling. So the Brut Rosé is 100% red wine grapes, but pressed as a white wine, so Blanc de Noir. And then we add a little bit of Pinot Noir red wine to the wine before we do the second fermentation in the bottle. And in Austria, we have three levels of quality on the sparklings. It's a classic, that's the basic level, which we are not doing. We start on the reserve level, which should be at least 18 months on the lease. We prefer today 24, but you will see it on the back label. When you turn the bottle, then you see a date of bottling and a date of degorgement. And so you have an idea how long it was on the lease and how long it's degorged. I prefer a longer aging on the lease, so 2 years at least, and then at least 6 months after degorgement. Then I think our sparklings are in a very good balance and ready to drink. And what we're doing on these is we harvest quite early to get light sparklings. So we only have around 12% alcohol to keep enough freshness in the wine. I like that very much because sparkling is something of freshness, and because of the time the wine gets in the bottle and before on the lees, it get enough complexity and deepness and good fruit expression, especially by the rosé, I would say. So, but let's go into biodynamic. The reason why this picture is now on the screen is a picture from Vincent van Gogh, the sower, because you see a farmer which is more in the center and influenced by the earth, soil, the blue color, and the light, the cosmic influence on top. And he is, or the farmers are the most important ingredient for biodynamic farming, because the farmers are doing their decisions how to farm. And so it's a farming system where people very much involved and independent again, so not influenced by all the companies in the world which are showing you how to farm. Here in Biodynamic, the farmer itself make his decision how to farm. And this is for me the main concept of Biodynamic. I'm sure you heard about the preparates and the cosmic influence and the moon and the moon circles and all that and the preparates and the steering and all that, because this is the part people get in touch and know. But the biggest difference between conventional farming and organic farming to biodynamic farming is this, the farm individuality. That means we try to farm without buying products and things you need for producing something from the outside. So that's the idea, to use all your resources you can find on your farm. That's the idea. And there are a few things like the fertilizers or the yeast in the cellar, which are very, very important when you talk about and wine, talking from the place the wine is coming from, so an appellation wine. Because I think you only get an appellation wine and the wine from your place when you do it like that. You try to produce only with things you find on your place and to farm with that. Another thing in nature is, and this is what we have to respect, is diversity. And of course, we also work in biodynamic with monoculture, as you can see, it's a vineyard. But we try to balance this with as much as possible diversity in the vineyards. And what's great on Austria is that farming land is still small structured. Of course, the plots get bigger and the farms get bigger, but we have still this diversity in the land. As you see in the back, trees and bushes, and an average size of our vineyard, for example, is only 0.7 hectares. And there's always something in between which creates diversity. And this helps to stay healthier by itself, because nature is working with that diversity. Nature normally doesn't need spraying or whatever or fertilizers to get green and to flower and to produce something. And another thing of nature is animals. So plants and animals, they build the soil, and the soil today is the basic of all life. And so it's also important that you work with animals, not only with big ones like sheep or cows maybe. You also have to think about the animals in the soil and above the soil. And you have to create a situation where all these insects and microorganisms and bacteria and worms and whatever can live and help you to get a healthy environment. This is, you have to know, it's more a symbol, this picture. We are not plowing everything by horses. We do one vineyard. For me, it's an important symbol because it's the respect for the soil. The soil is the mother of all life. And when you don't treat the soil well, so when you use herbicides, when you put in the fertilizers, the artificial fertilizers and all that, then you start ruining this very complex system. And to have a healthy soil is important to have healthy plants on top. Just an impression from compost, black and worms in, and this is how we do composting. We work with only organic material we find on our place. We buy a little bit of dung because we only have 20 sheep, and this is far too less to make really enough compost. But today we make compost in a very high quality, and then we do compost tea out of it because that's the easier way to get humidification in the soil. So we spray bacteria from our compost on the soil and work there with the organic material we have in the vineyards. And then of course the preparates. When we talk about biodynamic, we have of course to talk about the preparates. This is 500, so it's cow dung buried in soil in cow horns. And the idea of all these preparates is balancing the growth. And it's not so easy to measure, of course. Are they working? Are they not working? But in the meantime, there are a lot of trials to find out, is there an influence of the preparates? And there is an influence which you can see. It's the growth itself. They are growing different, even different to organic farmed vineyards. And you see it on the color, and you see it on the physiological ripeness of the berries and the grapes, which is different to organic farmed vineyards, and of course, even more to conventional farmed vineyards. This is why it's called biodynamic, because it's the dynamization of the preparates, so steering in a steering pot, because the information which is in the preparate has to get into water to get sprayed on the soil or in the leaves. And what's also happening during this process is you get also in the emotions of the farmers. And that's also quite an important part. That's why we steer by hand, and that's why I steer by hand. I try to steer almost everything by myself, because that's the way to get my emotion on the field. And I think it's important. And even when it's not working, this is an hour. It's an hour where I really be concentrated and think about my soil and my vineyards. And I think even because of that, you have a different quality at the end. What's also critical in the vineyard is handwork. We have to be quick in the vineyards. So time is a critical factor in the vineyards. We have to be quick in all our canopy management, because we have to lighten up the canopy so it can dry very quick when it rains. This is the best helping part for staying healthy. So after bud break, in a week from now, maybe in 2 weeks, we will start with that, and we have to get everything done within 3-4 weeks latest, because shoots can grow quite fast, and then this work get more and more difficult. And then the end of a season, it's also the hand harvest, which is for me important, because I want to have healthy, ripe and clean grapes, no botrytis at all for my wines. And that's why we harvest everything by hand, and we transport everything in small baskets, not only for sparkling. We transport all our fruit in these 20 kilo baskets. This is Riesling, by the way. For Sekt, which we have in the glass now, it's a very important thing, because we harvest quite early the grapes for Sekt, and so they are not fully ripe, and that's why they are very sensitive to oxidation, and that's why they should get undamaged to the press. Yeah, and this is Grüner Veltliner, which we will try afterwards. And now we go into the cellar, but maybe we take the extra Brut as next wine. Or if there are any questions, you can stop. stop me and so the extra brut is not Grüner Veltliner. It's the wrong picture in a way. The extra brut is a blend of 50% Zweigelt, so red wine grape, Blanc de Noir, and 20% Pinot Noir. So 70% of that wine are red wine grapes. And the rest is Chardonnay and Pinot Blanc and a little bit of Pinot Gris. And what we do on these two sparklings is these are both non-vintages. So we work with around, on these two wines, 20% reserve vintages. So I told you we started in 13. And so this at the moment is 17, which you should have in your glass. So the main vintage is 17, but 20% are vintages of 16, 15, 14, and 13. So we do this Solera way. So we keep always from the cuvée a little bit back in tanks and add it to the next blend in the next year. That's the idea of these two wines. It's also a reserve, so also around 2 years on the lease. And it's even drier. So on the rosé, we have on the label Brut Rosé, but it would be more or less extra Brut Rosé. It's only add of 3 grams. So in total, maybe 4.5 grams. And the extra brut, the white, is even drier. We add only 2 grams. Yeah, so cellar in biodynamic and the way we are working, same idea as outside in the vineyards, no ads. So it's low intervention winemaking. The only thing we need today is sulfur. Because we are not working sulfur-free, we have trials, but I feel more comfortable to add a little bit of sulfur. The wines are more stable at the end, and the risk of having too much volatile or maybe mouse tones or whatever is less when you add a little bit of sulfur. But our wines today are very, very low in sulfur, and the sparklings, the two sparklings, are only on 35 ppm total sulfur, so milligram, and almost nothing free, because the only add of sulfur for the sparklings is after the first racking, so before the second fermentation, and there's no add by degauchement, so it's quite sulfur-free when it comes to the free SO2. So sorting is normally in the vineyards, but we do also a little bit of Pinot Noir red wine, and we do some, we will have it at the end, natural wines, where it's very critical to have only really good berries for fermentation, and that's why we are sorting also after the destemmer or before destemmer to have a last overview of over the berries and grapes. So we don't have any rotten fruit into there. Then we work with different materials, main material, of course, and especially for the wines, except the last one we will have today is a stainless steel, but we also work with wooden cask. It's a mixture of some of these casks are acacia, which is the old wood here in the region. So 100 years ago, this was the main wood here, acacia, because it's growing here. But it's also growing, you can also find oak trees here, and that's why oak and acacia are the two woods which are used here in the region. But we also, and the last one will be out of this, clay buried in soil as the Georgian way, kveveris, where we do some of our naturals into their very interesting way of winemaking. I wanted to try it. It's not really the tradition, I would say, here in the region, but it's an interesting way of making wine. Yeah, so I don't know if we'll, a few words to the to our wines. As we do here in Kamptal, in a very diverse area, different varieties, we have quite a lot of different wines at the end. Then we do the sparkling, and then we have an appellation system here, the Kamptal DSC. That's why we do a basic wine, which is the region wine. Then we do a village level, the Langenlois, and then the single vineyards. So it's quite a big sortiment of wines we do today. That's why also the labels are a little different, so you get not lost in that sortiment. Sparklings look different, and the naturals look different on the right side, because we call our naturals mit Achtung, so with attention, meaning that they are a little different, and you have to be open-minded and to taste carefully these wines because they have a different taste, a different aroma profile, a different palate. But this is wine. Wine can be different, not only from place to place, not only from year to year, not only from winery to winery or variety to variety. It also depends very much on the vinification itself, which is done in a cellar. Yeah, and also the sparklings is handwork from the beginning, from hand harvest to riddling on these racks. So we have a very close contact to each single bottle of the sparklings. These two you had, and on sparklings we do also Große Reserve. Große Reserve means in Austria at least 30 months on the lease in the bottle. We do Blanc de Blanc from Langenlois, the village where the grapes come from, as a Brut Nature, so zero dosage. And this is mainly Chardonnay and Pinot Blanc and a little bit of Pinot Gris in the 14. And the 16 we degorged last week will be mainly Chardonnay and a little bit of Pinot Blanc. And there will come also a Blanc de Noir in the future from our second place where we have some few vineyards. This is south of Vienna, Gumpoldskirchen, one of the most famous places in the 19th century of Austria. And this is something brand new, which is coming in September, Blanc de Noir from this place. Yeah, this is my family at the very end of this little presentation. And yes, I would say I switch off the presentation so we can see each other and to the rest of the wines. Or are there questions in the meantime?
No questions so far. We do have one question that came in before the event. So what are the challenges in biodynamic viticulture, and how do biodynamic farms work with potential runoff from neighbors not sharing the biodynamic and organic farming practices?
Yeah, so maybe we start at the end. The great thing here is Austria in the meantime is number one when it comes to organic or biodynamic farming in the world, so in percent. So 25% of all farming land today is organic certified in Austria. And in viticulture, it's lesser, but it's also 15% in the meantime, which is absolutely number one in the world. And we have more and more vineyards where we don't have conventional farmed vineyards as neighbors. But of course, we have vineyards where we have conventional farmed vineyards as neighbors. And this is on one hand a problem, but not that as you might think, because the biggest problem are the sprayings, so the fungicides and all that. There are no insecticides here in the region because we all work here with pheromones. So 100% of the vineyards using this system. So nobody's using insecticides here. And the herbicides are not a problem because they are very on one place. So they're not influencing you, except when you look to these vineyards, because they look poor and it's really sad that people are doing that, but it happens. The only thing which is left are the fungicides, and this problem is much bigger as only a problem of neighbors, because these products are flying over kilometers, and what you see today is they did research in the Alps on 3,000 meters. And they took insects with bigger insects to get something to measure, and they find all used fungicides in farming on 3,000 meters. So this is everywhere today. It's sad, but it is like it is. Of course, you have a little bit more when a neighbor is spraying by wind, which is forbidden, but it happens. Then there's a bigger influence. But the thing is, what we are saying is, when your neighbor is not living in a healthy way, so eating too fat, making no sports and whatever, he has a bigger chance to get sick as you as the neighbor who try to stay healthy. And I think that's quite similar in the field outside, and you see it, you really see it. The borders are quite sharp. When you especially in autumn, when the leaf color is changing and the ripening starts, you really see how someone is working. You see vineyards getting earlier yellow, you get see vineyards staying a long time green, having short leaves, short shoots or longer shoots. So that's quite an exact thing outside. But of course, fungicides are flying all over. That's might be a problem. And the biggest challenges here is, in farming, in biodynamic farming, first you have to change yourself. I think that's the main part of everything. The problems you see afterwards in the field are to handle. This is something you can learn and you can handle, but you have to stay as a farmer. You have to stay, I think, very open-minded and to watch carefully, to be very much awake when you walk through the vineyards or to your field. Because you have to see the problems or the upcoming problems, and you have to react. This is something you have to learn. And we had 2 years in the meantime, so in 2008 and in 2016, where we lost quite a lot of fruit because of mildew. But we always knew afterwards what we did wrong. And so I hope I will not do this mistake a second time or third time. Let's see. But the good thing is that we know why it happens, and we know what to do. And the most important thing in biodynamic, I told you already during the presentation, is this critical thing of time in the vineyards. So we need a lot of people in May and June. We have to do a proper canopy management very, very quick. That's one of the keys to get healthy fruit at the end of the season. So especially from bud break to flowering, and this phase of flowering, blooming, then the wines are very, very sensitive. When you get an infection in this period, you can lose your whole crop. And so up to, let's say, up to this berry size of 3, 4, 5 millimeters, so small berries, up to this point, you have to be very, very careful, and you have to be very, very quick. And that's why you need people to handle that. Afterwards, it gets more stable, and then you can start relaxing and waiting for harvest. But up to this time, so these 2 months in a year, they are very critical.
Lovely. Let's move into the tasting of the Riesling. And for everyone, that will be sample bottle number 3.
Yep. So 18 Riesling in Kamptal is, for me, a very good combination, because we have really good soil conditions. It's a cooler climate here. That's why our Rieslings are lighter, never too fat, never too high in alcohol. But they have quite a very soft acidity and a very, very good fruit expression. The soil types here, primary rock and the sandstone on the Heiligenstein, they're quite perfect for Riesling, because Riesling need well-drained soil at the end to get no botrytis, because when you have a fat soil, there's a big risk of botrytis at the end of the season. 18 as a vintage is warm. It was a warm vintage, but it was not a hot vintage. So there's a slightly difference in the character of the wines to other hot vintages, like 17, for example, or even more 11 and 12, where we had very high temperatures at the end of the season. So mid-August, end of August, when the fruit was ripe, and then there was another few days, really high temperatures. And this we didn't have in 18. That's why the 18 have a very, very soft acidity. You see, it's a ripe year, of course, it's a warm year, but it has enough freshness and a very good fruit expression because it was not too hot. That's the great thing on the 18 vintage. And it's developed now, so I would say ready to drink. Yeah, let's jump to Grüner, because also at the end, the Gemischter Satz is also a little bit of Grüner Veltliner in. So Grüner Veltliner in different vinifications. First is the 19, I guess. Hmm? Yeah, 19 Kamptal. So it's the region wine. Maybe it's not absolutely the same level, but it should be this one. Lois, it says Lois, which is the nickname of the town, Langenlois. So it's Langen means long, and Lois is a name. And it's also the name of my older son. So my older son is named Lois Leumann. In the States, it's a female name. Here, it's a male name, coming from Alois. Yeah, Grüner Veltliner is the main variety here, by far. 50% of everything is Grüner Veltliner here. This is for sure because of the climate, but very much also because of the soils. Our most important, or maybe the beside the primary rock, so these left and right, this is primary rock, not easy to see, but it's a pure rock on a meter down, and then very dry. And this here, this is loess. So wind-pressed sand, looks very boring, The great thing on that is it's very mineral because it's coming from the Alps. It's wind-pressed sand from the Alps, blown in the ice ages to here and covered here everything. High content of choke, limestone, and very easy for the roots to go down and deep. And this is important for Grüne Veltliner because Grüne Veltliner need water and food, and so need very fertile soils, and Lös is serving that. And this is one of the reasons why Grüne Veltliner is so important here in the region. And Grüne Veltliner is a grape which for me has its strength more in the middle body wines. So these 12 to maximum 13, better 12.5 alcohol. And this is the ripeness we try to get on Grüne Veltliner. So the basic is always on around 12% alcohol. So we try to, but this is for all our wines, we try to harvest not overripe. So we harvest quite early because I like today, I did when I was young, I did the opposite, I would say. We harvested late to get body and power and alcohol and points at the end. But today we take care about drinkability, enjoyable pleasure, and all these things. And also we take care about the place, and Kamptal as a cooler place of wine growing in the world should produce lighter, fresher wines. And that's why we try to harvest on the right time, whatever this is. But biodynamic help us a little bit in that, because with biodynamic farming, you reach easy a physiological ripeness, and you reach that without having too much sugar. And so we can harvest quite early and so stay lighter at the end. Grüne Veltliner in that style is fermenting 100% in stainless steel, and it's not that long on the lees, so we start bottling normally end February, beginning March of next year after the harvest. So it's around 6 months in the tanks. Yeah, and the second Grüner, it's the green label, I guess. No? Yeah. The second Grüner is the Langenlois Grüner. So I told you already, we have the system of, it's the same idea as Burgundy has or had for many years ago. It's an appellation system, a DSC system with three levels. Basic wine are the region wines. So in our case, it's Kamptal. Then the village level. So this is the Langenlois. It's the middle level. And on top are the single vineyards. We don't have one in that tasting today, but the video we have seen at the beginning is from one of these single vineyards. It's Loiserberg, where we do Grüne Veltliner and Riesling. But the village level, the Langenlois, is a wine coming from classified sites. So it's not a single vineyard because it's coming from different sites, but all of them are classified as Erste Lage. So it's, let's say it's the cuvée of the Prima Cruz, the Erste Lage wines, which get in bottle normally so May after harvest, so a little longer as the region wine, but not that long as the single vineyards, because the single vineyards today are sitting on lees over 1.5 years. So we have them a second winter in our cask or in stainless steel. And in the meantime, so 17 was the first vintage. Today we do all our single vineyards without filtration. That's why we keep them longer long iron in cask and stainless steel. So we have natural settlement and then can bottle without filtration. They are absolutely clean, look like filtered, almost filtered, but they are not filtered because of that long period in cask. Yeah. Any questions to the wines?
No questions on the wines. We are approaching the last wine, which is a very special wine. So while we near the corner on this last wine, I do have a question about natural wine. What is a natural wine as defined as both a viticulturist and as a business owner?
So natural wine is a consequence of biodynamic wine viticulture and winemaking. Because as I said, the concept of biodynamic is nothing from the outside. So you produce grapes and you produce wine without only using the own resources you have. And the own resource in the cellar are spontaneous fermentation, so your own yeasts. We use a little bit of sulfur, but that's it. That's everything we do on interventions to that wine. The idea is to get even more the place and maybe also, you know, the people. But there's a difference between an appellation wine and a natural wine. An appellation wine has always something to do with a group, so the village, for example. So my colleagues and me, we're sitting on a table tasting and have an idea of an appellation wine, and that's a consensus of all together. A natural wine is only something you can do alone. You don't need your colleagues for that. This is your wine. And as there is nothing in Austrian law what the natural wine really is, we have today the term natural wine in the law. It's in between the Landwein. So it's not allowed to use village names and to use single vineyard names. So you only can say Austrian Landwein on natural wines because they are out of that appellation, of the appellation style. The only guideline we have are the RESPECT guidelines. So RESPECT is the group, it's a certifying body for biodynamic here in Austria and Germany and North Italy. And we have in our guidelines, you can find them on the website, also rules for natural wine. And it says maximum is 50 milligram of SO2. No finings, no filtrations. So only SO2 is allowed. That's the only thing what's allowed for natural wines. Here for this wine, so we do different natural wines. We do also a wine which is a blend of skin fermented, but also not only skin contact and also whole cluster pressing, but also low sulfur and no finings, no filtrations. This wine we have in the glass now is a classic orange wine. So it's a white wine, full fermented on the skins. So more or less made like red wine. It's absolutely the same. And we do it in the very same way. And then we try to keep the sulfur level even lower. And because of the skin fermentation, you get the chance because of the tannins, they bring more reduction to the wine. So you can lower your sulfur levels. And this wine was 1 year absolutely without sulfur in a cask, then half a year with a little bit, and then we bottled. And there was only one add of sulfur in all that time. And the very interesting thing on these wines for me is they are closer to the grapes. So when you go into the vineyards, when the grapes are ripe and you taste the berries, especially by aromatic grapes like a Muscadello or a Tramina, but also very much on Grüner Veltliner. Grüner Veltliner has also kind of aromatics in. You find the aromas also in the wine afterwards, in a wine like that. So they are very close to grapes. They have a juicier taste, juicier mouth feeling. And what's fascinating is even with this low sulfur, they're very stable. So you open a bottle, you take a glass, you take next day a glass, you take 3 days after a glass, and you see that even a development in the better direction instead of getting oxidized or whatever. And I think it is because the wine is already oxidized or has already oxidation. It's not oxidized. Oxidized is for me always negative, but has had already oxidation. So the aromas the wine has are very stable. And this is the great thing on for me on these wines. But of course, it's a different aromatic, it's a different palate. And you have to taste when you taste this first, maybe a second time to get really in touch with these wines. But a lot of people today, they drink more or less only this. And when they switch back, they only feel sulfur. So it's the personal taste has very much to do with the things you like first and you take most. It's like having espresso or having coffee with milk. That's two different ways of having coffee.
That's a really good way of explaining it. Thank you so much. So we do have a question that popped up. As you look to the future, what excites you most about Austrian winemaking? And what do you foresee as your greatest challenge?
Oh, okay. I would say what's really fascinating on Austria is that it's not only my generation, it's also the next generation which comes up. They are, all of them are open-minded and very curious about trying new things. I think that's a reason why we have such a big movement to organic or biodynamic, because people want to see. And also, I would say quite a high average quality in Austria. So, of course, there are poor wines. Every country has poor wines, but the percentage of high quality wines is quite good in Austria, and a lot of young people, very well educated, having seen the world, I think they will come with a lot of new ideas to Austria, and this will keep us running in the right direction. And the second thing was, what's my
what do you foresee as your greatest challenge?
Good question. I don't know. I could say now climate warming, because that's popular to say that, but we already work biodynamic, so we do everything what's possible to keep our footprint very, very low in all these things. But at the end, we are farming, and this is not nature, this is culture. And that has an impact, of course. Let's see. I think the market is quite quick, and that might be a problem, because wine is very slow. When you have an idea, when you have an idea and then you plant that vineyard, or maybe you have to pick the right land first and you plant the vineyard, then you have 5-6 years to get the first wine, and maybe another 10 years to get the really, really good wine, first the really good wine. And then it should maybe age 5 years or 10 in the bottle. So it's a very slow thing. And I'm 57 now, so I have to stay healthy to get all my ideas to taste.
Thank you. And finally, are there any specific food pairings that you recommend for any of the wines that we've tasted tonight?
I would say Grüner Veltliner is a very, very good variety for vegetables. Vegetables are not that easy to pair, but Grüner Veltliner with this herbal character, with these peppery notes, with a slightly bitterness, fits quite well to all kind of vegetables, but also to oysters. It's also working, like the sparklings, and the wine like this at the end. So these Gemischter Satz is a field blend, so it's mixed in the vineyard. We harvest together these different varieties. It has that color because there are a few red colored berries in, like Roter Veltliner, so Red Veltliner and Roter Riesling. And I would say a wine like that is, you can use that as a Pinot Noir. So also with the meat, maybe not too dark, maybe not too heavy, but it's also work with that. So I would say these wines are quite flexible, maybe a little bit more on the lighter food side.
Excellent, thank you so much. That was an amazing presentation. Any final thoughts before we say goodnight? Fred, any final thoughts before we say goodnight?
I would say thank you for, I can't say, being awake so long, because that's my problem. I wish you a very nice evening. I hope you enjoyed the wines, and let's hope to travel soon. I think you're a little bit more in front as we are, but it's getting better. And restaurants start opening now here in Austria, so in 3 weeks from now. So there's a kind of optimism in the meantime, in our daily work. And hope to see you maybe here in Austria, or I hope for me to see you in your place, your country, because I like to travel. And wish you a nice evening and enjoy the wines you have now.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for everyone for joining us today. We appreciate your watching the presentation tonight and for your interest in the great wines of Austria. We encourage everyone to visit our website calendar at corkandfork.co to view the Austrian wine events we're hosting with some of the region's greatest producers, like Mr. Fred Loima. Fred, it was an incredible honor to have you tonight. And thank you so much for all of the hard work you do. And I'm going to end the meeting for all. So wishing everyone a lovely evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.